What up, beautiful people? Welcome to my podcast, Clueless with the K. The reason it's called Clueless with the K is because my name is Lucas, and instead of a C, it's spelled with a K. So I like Clueless with the K. Now that I got your attention and you know what the name of the podcast is, let's talk about video games. Not game talk with your boys or your homies with an extra chromie, you know? Actual video game talk and how it's affecting the world, for real. Video games, it's a business. And as we all know, business runs the world. Business is everywhere. Business is everything. Money is everything. Money is involved in everything. And that's what business is. Business is money. Money is business. So let's get into it. So let's just talk about what gaming really is turning into right now. Gaming, like I said, is just growing. It's a growing industry. It's not just a hobby. It's not just for fun. It's not a waste of time really anymore. It's not like, hey, why don't you go outside? You know, like everybody had those parents who was like, why don't you go outside instead of playing a game or play with your cousin or whatever? And it's just like, gaming is growing at, like, as we speak right now. Like, it's estimated, the market size of the gaming right now is estimated at $217.06 billion in 2022. And then in 2023, it was estimated at $242.39 billion and is expected to grow 13.4% up to $583.69 billion by 2030. Absurd. Now that you understand how fast gaming is growing and like the industry and how it is already impactful on people's money and how much money they're making, which means they're taking money from people. So let's get into the real world impacts besides spending my money on video games that I like to play or you like to play or your kids like to play. I'm more concerned on how it's affecting us emotionally, mentally, with our culture, how it's integrating us, how the diversity of games and like how it just brings people together, how it doesn't bring people together, the problems it causes, I guess the positives. But yeah, let's talk about the culture shock of gaming. And when I mean culture shock is just like changing the culture, like having an impact on the culture, maybe positively or negatively. I'd like to go back into saying what I said about how games and movies are kind of similar. Games are an interactive book or a movie, like, you're just part of it. You're part of the storyline. You make decisions that impact the storyline. And in movies, you watch it, you see how it changes and all that. You don't have an impact on it. Gaming is more just an interactive movie or interactive book. Now, the reason I compare them to books and movies is because those are real people. And those people are iconic figures. But gaming has also done that in the past and is still doing it till today, that they're becoming iconic figures. We've had The Witcher. We've had Tomb Raider. Laura Croft, Angelina Jolie, that's my girl. We'll get into that in a second. But now where I'd like to go off topic here is Angelina Jolie. So me and my girl, we were watching Mr. and Mrs. Smith. If you haven't seen that movie, what are you doing? Have you even watched any movies? Like, come on, man. But like, we were talking about it, and we were talking about Brad Pitt, and we were talking about, you know, cute men, whatever, cute women. She's not a big fan of Angelina Jolie. I don't get it. I don't see how you're not. She was comparing Brooke Davis, One Tree Hill, to Angelina Jolie and saying Brooke Davis was better. I was flabbergasted. First off, have you lost your damn mind? Like, how do you not think Angelina is gorgeous? Like, what? I can see, like, you know, like, people fall off a little bit. You got different tastes, but, like, come on. Nah. Let's get on the other side of games becoming movies. The Witcher. I love The Witcher. Great show. Great series. Great actor. Henry Cavill. Now, that man, I wouldn't mind taking a bite or a nibble out of. I'm just curious. I'm not really on that side of the spectrum, but if I was, I would take a bite just out of curiosity. There's nothing wrong with a little bit of curiosity. You just got to figure it out, you know? That's how the world advances. That's how the world has moved on, moved forward. Curiosity. You kill curiosity, you kill the world. Quote that. Yep, write that down. And the other point of where I think movies and shows and games and books are all very similar is not because of just like them being interactive, you know, them having a story, them having emotions, but movies impact your mood and so do games. They impact your mood. They can be motivational. They can be relatable. There's a lot of life lessons that even come from video games, movies, like, because those are people telling a story in their own way. In story games or any game that has a storyline, someone's telling a story. And those are stories usually come from people's experiences or how they've been told a story and how they took it or their opinion or their perspective on it. And I think that's real. That's real stuff. And a game can affect my mood by like making me mad or sad or, you know, upset. Same thing with the movie. A movie can inspire you to be like, oh, yeah, I got to go get it going. Or like maybe like the Rocky movies. If you haven't seen Rocky, first off, stop this podcast, go watch Rocky, and then we'll come back and we'll talk. But Rocky is a boxing show, a boxing movie, and it's inspirational. I mean, like, it's a guy who came out the gutter. He liked the box, you know, but it was more for, like, extra money. But then he put in the time, he put in the work, and now he became this famous boxer. That's an inspirational thing. And maybe a kid who loves boxing watches those movies and it inspires him. Or someone who had no interest in sports or boxing all of a sudden loves boxing and wants to get into it. Stuff like that. That's inspirational. I think games, movies, and books, they all can do that. But let's get into the real talk. Let's get back into business a little bit. Let's talk money. Gaming isn't only about making money, but you can also bet on games. You can bet on tournaments. People wager, you know, they put money up on tournaments. Like, one of the biggest gaming tournaments ever was in Vegas. You could go there, you could watch it. It was I believe a Fortnite one. If you haven't heard of Ninja, I get it. It's gaming. If you're not into gaming or you're just here to understand how gaming is changing the world, that's one thing. But Ninja was one of the first famous gamers who really, like, took it to a different level. He created the tournament. The tournament winners won, like, $5 million. And I don't know about you, but if I was good at a game, I would take a bite at that. I would take a bet or a wager and try to win $5 million. Playing a video game? What? Come on. But I want to talk to you about what esports is. There's been a battle that gaming is not a sport. And I'm going to be honest. What is a sport? A physical activity. Are you running? Not really. Not per se. Are you gaming? Yeah. But I wouldn't call it that. I would call it an activity. But isn't that what sports are? Sports are physical activity. And I'm moving my fingers. And not only does gaming help you move your fingers and become fast with your fingers, but, you know, like, got to hit the right buttons. And sometimes you got to hit the right buttons with your significant other. And I think gaming might help your fingers in that situation. I'm not being inappropriate. You are. But that's all I'm saying. I don't think sport, like, I think gaming isn't really a sport. I think they put esport into it because they think of teams. And I think when we think of teams, we think of sports. So I would think of gaming more as like a ping pong, a one-on-one sport, or chess. It's a big, like, there is physical activity with your hands and hand-eye coordination, but it's more of a mental game. It's strategic, quick on your feet, problem solving, or coming up with a strategy. That's how I feel like chess is. And like I said, if you've been gaming for a really long time and you're on a team, schools can reach out to you. They see that you've been playing in tournaments. They look at leaderboards. They check where you're from, and you can earn a scholarship to go get an education. Now, I don't know about you, but, like, college is expensive. I personally have been there. I'm in debt. I'm in a lot of debt. Not a lot of debt, but I'm in a lot of debt. You know, enough where it's like, that hurt me. I could have a car, but instead I have debt. But that's the issue. But you could go on scholarship for playing a video game. It's not, there's no dead end in gaming anymore. Now, we've kind of been talking about gaming in a general sense. So let's get into more pros and cons. Let's create a list. Let's talk about how it's messing up the world and how it's doing good for the world. Let's talk pros first. You know, I like to get the good news before you spit in my food, you know, or before I find out that you did spit in my food and I already ate it, you know. There's been diversity in gaming and showing us a connection between different races, gender, and different backgrounds. Now, that's in gaming. I'm not talking about people in general. I'm talking about video games in general, like the actual game itself. There's been diversity in games showing us connection and social connection, interaction between different races, gender, and different backgrounds. Characters can show complex social issues. They can represent empathetic tendencies. And I mean, like, you know, having, like, emotional intelligence, it can show you that through the video game. You know, like, they show emotion. And the game that sticks out to me the most to show social issues and empathetic tendencies or emotional intelligence was The Last of Us. And I bring up The Last of Us because it is a show and it was a very popular show. But it was first. It was a game first. There was two games. Very sad. I haven't played the second one, so don't tell me anything about the second one if you comment in this video. Please. But all I know is I've heard it's sad. The first one was kind of sad. I mean, it's a post-apocalyptic story. Of course, it's going to be sad. People are going to die. But, and it's an interactive story, and every decision you make has a pro and a con, or a bad ending or a good ending. But that also shows that you have to have intelligence. You have to make a good decision, or what you think is a good suggestion. Good decision. My bad. Sorry, I stuttered. But, like, if you know what the common good is, it's like, here, I was in school, My English class, I fell asleep in my English class. I played football and I fell asleep because I had early practice. Don't tell my coach. I don't care. I sat the bench anyway. But I was in class and we were having a, the course was on morals. And we were talking about the common good. And I'll give you an example of what the common good is. So this was the example he gave me. He put me in a bad spot because he just woke me up. But he was like, look, there's 13 people or whatever number amount of people down in this basement. The killer's upstairs. You guys are hiding. There's a crying baby. Okay? And the only way to save the other 13 people is to kill the baby. Now, you save 13 people, but you have a dead baby. Or you let the baby cry and everybody dies. That was the common good. So the common good would technically be killing the baby. He asked me in a yes or no, and I said yes originally, so I chose to kill the baby. Now, I got a lot of dirty looks, especially from the ladies in the classroom. But he trapped me because I don't think I even knew the question originally. But then he reiterated it to me because I had just woken up. But I still think you have to look at it in the common good. And that game shows that. That's emotional intelligence, or that's in-game decision making. You see that in movies. You see that in books. You'll reread about it in books. But or you can just hear about it because people just do audiobooks nowadays. Which, come on. Is that really a book? But that's all I'm saying. So in that sense, games can show complex social issues and social awkwardness, you know, learning how to be social, like understanding a conversation. Like, you can study conversations. People study people. That's school. I don't know what it's called, but it's studying people. Now, let's get to the out of the actual game itself and get into the gaming, like, community. Like, that, like, you act like yourself, you playing the actual game. So, like, it's a social network all its own. It creates communities, it creates friendships, and not only, like, friendships while you're playing the game, but in real life. Because it's, like, you're getting to know someone over the game. It creates communities because, like, let's say I'm playing the game, and I do really well. That gravitates someone to it. It's just like sports, like, as a football. You know, you see a really great football player, you're like, oh, dude's cool. Like, dude's good at the game. Like, and, you know, he puts the time in, so that's an interest. That's something that you already have an in common thing to talk about. You can talk about gaming with those people. Now it's like, oh, you get to play this game, you get to play this game. And now you get to learn a little about their life outside the game. You're like, hey, bro, hey, how was the day going? And they're talking about their family or school or whatever it may be. That's a friendship. But now you're learning about them, about their, like, life outside the game. That's an in real life friendship. And I don't mean social network in, like, the social network, like the movie Facebook or the movie about Facebook with Mark Wahlberg, where he created Hot or Not. Not that social network. Definitely not that. Just people need to talk to people. You need to have some type of social background. No, not background. Social connection with people, because you need to talk to people. If not, you're going to drive yourself crazy. Now, I talk to myself, but then you know what they say. Geniuses talk to themselves because we're really the only ones that can understand each other. So I'm a genius. And I can only really understand myself. So I have a lot of personalities that I talk to. I talk to myself all the time. I'm not saying I'm a genius, but aren't we all a little genius in our own way? Maybe not. Maybe I'm crazy. I don't know. Now, another place that you get a social network is education. School. And there's a lot of educational potential in video games.
Play is the highest form of research, Einstein allegedly said. Today, play also happens in video games. And teachers use them in class or for homework.
But schools use video games for engagement. Like, it's interactive. It re-engages. People lose their focus very easily. Especially, like, for me, I work at a school. I work with young kids. They use games all the time. They'll put a video up on the TV and the kids can come up and tap the screen or whatever. But it just re-engages them. It allows them to be interactive. And honestly, that's some of the best way. If you're not engaged, you're not going to learn fully. You may pick up on bits and pieces, but you're not learning the full issue or the full subject or full whatever the purpose of what you're trying to teach. But games can be used for this now. It's not just for, like, fun. It's not for just a hobby. It helps you learn. Now, let's take education way past what I was just talking about in kindergarten and kids losing their focus. Let's talk about military and medical. Military, I mean, technically you can just go to the military. You don't need an education, but you get educated when you're in the military about stuff. But
The Avert system is a highly adaptive, free-roam, fully immersive VR system. It's designed to deliver training outcomes, specifically in high-risk scenarios, such as law enforcement and military areas. Our system puts people into a fully immersive, scenario-based training environment where they're able to move freely and naturally and achieve all the learning outcomes that we'd expect from them in a very realistic environment.
But, and then medical, that's 8-year program, and I still don't know if I trust you to cut me open, you know, like, what, because you went to school, you read some books, you have the skills to cut me open? That's all I'm saying. But video games are now turning, you know, there's virtual reality now, so they've taken games and made them simulations. So the virtual simulations for military and medical examinations are like, what would happen if you did this or like that? You get to experience, you get to actually do it. You get to make the mistake because we learn from what? Our failures. If you're scared to fail, you're scared to learn. Now we talked about potential in education. Now let's talk about the potential dangers that video games can cause. Let's hop from the pros over to the cons, because potential is limitless. The curiosity is limitless. It moves us forward. But with that much power and time into a game or into that industry or evolving that type of technology, it can become dangerous. If you haven't seen the Avengers movies where Ultron is a piece of technology that they created and it went bad, that's all I'm saying. I wouldn't say he's going to end the world or he's going to just pick up a piece of the earth and drop it, you know, but games have side effects. They have real life problems that they can cause for people. So let's get into that. First off, I'm a big victim of this one, laziness. Sometimes, like, my girl says I'm addicted to the game, but I'm not addicted to the game because I can control my shit. I can live in moderation. No, I cannot. I'm actually terrible with moderation. So maybe I have an addictive personality, and that could be scary. But I get lazy. Sometimes I just want to come home. I don't want to do my chores. I don't want to do the dishes. I live by myself now, so I don't have chores. I guess I just have responsibilities. But I got to clean. I got to do this. I got to pay bills. You know, I got to go to work. But sometimes I'm just like, damn, bro, I just want to play the game with the boys. You know? That's just how it be. So I've dealt with that in my life in general. And I'm not saying games caused all my laziness, because I'm a movie junkie too. I can sit down and watch movies all day, especially if it's a good movie. But that's been for me. Bad money spending. People are terrible with their money because impulse buys. I'm impulsive. I'm cheap though. So I'm not impulsive, super impulsive with my money. Thank goodness I don't have this problem. But bad financial decisions. You see a game that all your friends are playing, you're like, damn, now I'm left out. Now I want to buy a game or I want to buy that console. That's $300 or more, whatever you're buying. Nothing is really $300 when it comes to gaming anymore besides the video games. And even those prices have went up from like 40 to 50 to 70 now. That's $100. That's my water bill. Well, that's a little more than my water bill. But you see what I'm saying. Health problems. You can get eating disorders because you could get so sucked into the game that you forget to eat. You forget to drink water, or you're eating and you're not moving enough. But there has been a study show that you burn calories while playing the game. I mean, like, you burn calories no matter what because of your body, but you burn something, whatever. But, you know, then there's obesity, and the U.S. is one of the top places for deaths in obesity. So there are side effects. There's negative things to everything. Everything has a positive and everything has a negative. You just got to know moderation. There's been a study that aggression can be caused because games are violent. There's shooting games. There's, you know, you could be even just playing a racing game and be like, I feel like making that dude crash. I mean, please don't do that in real life, because, like, nah, I'm not going to lie. I got road rage. I do have road rage. Sometimes, like, when a dude passes me, I'm like, I'm going 5 over, dude. Why you on my butt? You pass me, I might clip you. That's how I be feeling. That's how I be feeling sometimes. I don't know what the percentages is, but another conversation I just had with some of my friends is, do games, violent games, cause school shootings, or do they have an impact on school shootings? I always just thought it was from bullying white kids, because, you know, if you haven't seen the numbers, and I don't want to bring race into this, but it's all white kids basically for the most part of school shootings. So maybe if we just stop bullying white kids, you'd be all right. That's just me. Mass shootings between 1982 and 2023 had 80 out of 149 are white. So now you have some evidence of a reason to stop bullying white kids. CNN and Villanova, and if you don't know what Villanova is, that's where Jalen Brunson is from. Good hooper, you know, plays for the Knicks right now. But it's a great school. great education, great school, whatever. But their studies have shown that there is no direct connection from gaming to school shootings. Now, higher up political figures back in 2019 would like to disagree. Now, these are old heads, though. These are old people. And old people don't like technology. First off, they just can't understand it. I'm sorry, old heads, if you're listening to this. I'm not taking a shot at you. I'm kind of taking a shot at you. Y'all were crank turning your cars to start your cars or whatever, you know, like you use matches to light your cigarettes. Now we just have vapes. You know, I'm just saying, like, I think people get scared of forward progress because you can't keep up. And I think they like to blame games because games are violent and they just want to have a reason for kids not to game anymore. Basically, I don't know. I don't know what the hate is on games. I mean, like, what? Come on, man. The article that Villanova actually found in... brought up to attention is that political figures in the media seem to blame it on the game if they don't look criminal. If you don't know what that means, have you been living under a rock? Looking criminal just means like you look sus. And sometimes that's a race thing, and that's an issue, and they brought that up in the Villanova thing too. But some people just look sketchy. You know, if you're walking down the street, dude's got his hoodie up, wearing all black or like all gray or, you know, like a color, you're like, dude, looking a little sus. It'd be like that. So, criminal. Basically just stereotyping for the most part. But yeah. Also, if you're not watching this on YouTube and you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple Podcast, whatever it's called, there are graphs, there are pictures, there are videos being shown. And I'm not reading all the articles because I'm giving my opinion on the articles that I've seen or heard or whatever. So if you want to see the full thing, go to YouTube. It's going to be better. First off, you get to see my beautiful face. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not that cute. But, yeah, just so you know. But in the future, I will be reading the articles just for not this one because I'm not going to lie. It's my first podcast and I did not prepare correctly. But off that side note. So basically, from most studies, there is no direct correlation from video games causing violence in real life. But it definitely has an effect on people's moods, their habits, and just affects them in a certain way. I mean, like I said, it does it in movies, it does it with books. You get worked up, you feel emotional. You're like, oh my God. You know, like when you're on the edge of your seat, you're anxious? Movies do that to you. You know, thrillers, like psychological movies. Games can be psychological too. Bringing up psychological things, I have a video for you, but I'm only gonna show bits and pieces of it because it's not my video, but I thought it had some really good information. And it's basically just about talking about how games affect your brain.
Let's talk about dopamine. The way that your body uses dopamine is to have a baseline level of dopamine, meaning an amount of dopamine that's circulating in your brain and body all the time. And that turns out to be important for how you feel generally, whether or not you're in a good mood, motivated, etc. And you also can experience peaks in dopamine above baseline. When you experience something or you crave something really desirable, really exciting to you, very pleasurable, what happens afterwards is your baseline level of dopamine drops. Okay, so these peaks in dopamine, they influence how much dopamine will generally be circulating afterward. And you might think, oh, a big peak in dopamine, after that, I'm going to feel even better because I just had this great event. Not the case. What actually happens is that your baseline level of dopamine drops. Dopamine has everything to do with how you feel right now as you're listening to this. It has everything to do with how you will feel an hour from now. It has everything to do with your level of motivation and your level of desire and your willingness to push through effort. If ever you've interacted with somebody who just doesn't seem to have any drive, they've given up, or if you've interacted with somebody who seems to have endless drive and energy, what you are looking at there in those two circumstances is without question a difference in the level of dopamine circulating in their system. Dopamine is what we call a neuromodulator. Neuromodulators are different than neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters are involved in the dialogue between neurons, nerve cells, and neurotransmitters tend to mediate local communication. Just imagine two people talking to one another at a concert. Communication between them is analogous to the communication carried out by neurotransmitters, whereas neuromodulators influence the communication of many neurons. Imagine a bunch of people dancing where it's a coordinated dance involving 10 or 20 or hundreds of people. Neuromodulators are coordinating that dance. In the nervous system, what this means is that dopamine release changes the probability that certain neural circuits will be active, other neural circuits will be inactive. Okay, so it modulates a bunch of things all at once. And that's why it's so powerful at shifting not just our levels of energy, but also our mindset, also our feelings of whether or not we can or cannot accomplish something. It is not just responsible for pleasure. It is responsible for motivation and drive, primarily at the psychological level, also for craving. Those three things are sort of the same: motivation, drive, and craving. It also controls time perception.
Okay, that's cool and all, but let's get into what role video games play in dopamine neuroscience.
People will play a video game, they love it, it's super exciting to them, and then they'll keep playing and playing and playing, and either one of two things happens, typically both. First of all, I always say addiction is a progressive narrowing of the things that bring you pleasure. So oftentimes what will happen is the person only has excitement and can achieve dopamine release to the same extent doing that behavior and not other behaviors. And so they start losing interest in school, they start losing interest in relationships, they start losing interest in fitness and well-being, and depletes their life. And eventually what typically happens is they will stop getting dopamine release from that activity as well. And then they drop into a pretty serious depression,
which is psychological. The biggest thing that I realized, and I just thought it was crazy, is that there's a higher dopamine level in video games than there is sex. Now, there is a stereotype that most gamers are nerds or they're antisocial and they can't get women. I got a girl, and I'm gonna tell you right now, I would never pass up the chance to split the cheeks, getting the yams over a video game. Would I make her wait? That's a possibility. I don't know. But all I'm saying is, if you're passing up sex for video games, it might be actually time to go outside. Now let's back up to it. I brought up 2019. We all know what that is. That's COVID, baby. COVID-19. The vid-19. You know how they say the freshman 15, when you go to college your freshman year and you put on 15 pounds? Well, in this case, let's just say people put on some weight because COVID-19, 19 pounds. You're just sitting inside, not doing nothing. Can't go to the gyms. Gyms are closed. Work is closed. Physical activity is at an all-time low. So, what was the cure? Video games. No, I'm just kidding. But they have had some very good effects and helped a lot of people in the COVID years because of that social networking, talking to people over the game, you know, like just interacting, just getting your brain into a new space, not just sitting at home getting winter depression or just COVID-19 depression. Now, as a gamer though, I think some of us thought it was going to create an apocalypse. I mean, people were getting sick, people were coughing, people were, you know, dying. You know, as a gamer myself, I think apocalypse would be pretty cool. It'd be sad because, you know, your family died. You know, you got zombies or whatever type of apocalypse it is. If it's World War Z zombies, I'm out. I'm ending it. But if it's like Walking Dead and they're just walking around, I'm chilling. I'd be all right. But I think we all kind of think, like, it'd be kind of cool to survive it. I mean, we survived an epidemic. Yeah, is that what it's called? Epidemic. So, I mean, still pretty cool. But, you know, I think the apocalypse would have been like one of those stories where it's like, see, back in my day, we killed some zombies. But the reason I'm bringing it up is because, like I said, gaming was at an all-time high, and I think it was a very big time consumer. I mean, it was one of the biggest time consumers. The numbers went skyrocketing to people who didn't game, non-gamers, to gamers. And we all know the side effects of COVID were mental health. Mental health was huge during this time, and how, I mean, you know, we've all heard of winter depression. COVID was this, except way worse. Like, you had there was no going outside. There was no going to Walmart. No seeing people besides the people that you live in a household with. And if you ain't got no one that you live with and you're all alone, that's a lot of alone time. That's a lot of demons going on in your head. It's a lot of thoughts, you know? But mental health can be impacted positively and negative from video games. Depression and anxiety was at an all-time high. but so was gaming, reporting at 2.8 billion users of streaming or gaming. And I say streaming because you're watching gaming, you're still getting that dopamine. It's basically social media. But game time was increased by 74.6%. And I think it was a really safe way to just be social. It was a way to interact with people that you don't get to see every day, or if you're not with your family, like, you know, we all get sick of our families, you know? We get sick of our siblings. It's like, go away sometimes, you know? That's just how it be. But if you're spending that much time in a house together, eventually you're gonna snap, you know? It's a lot of tension, it's a lot of depression, a lot of mental issues going on right now, and a lot of people feeling very scared from an epidemic. Gamers experienced better stress levels by 35% during strict lockdowns. It was shown that gaming improved socialization and mental health. But the correlation between, you know, the old heads blaming video games for shooting, COVID-19, for mental health, I'm not saying that gaming doesn't have an impact, or if it does or does not. It's just like, when after COVID, you know, people went to school, people were depressed, people had mental issues. You go to school, you're not used to being social anymore, and then people are attacking you, bullying you, you're not used to social interaction. And I'm not giving any excuse for school shooting, because what the fuck? Why are you shooting people, and why do you have a reach of guns if you're a child? Or why do you go to school to shoot people? Like, what the fudge? But, like, COVID-19, I feel like they just wanted to have a blame, and it was that. Because out of COVID-19, that's when school shootings went whoop up, you know? So I think people just wanted something to blame, and I think that's where games went. But from looking at the numbers, gaming was actually helping people during COVID-19. So I don't know, man. It's a weird tie together, but I just wanted to bring that up to a point that there's never going to be a direct cause on why people decide to make stupid decisions. That's just it, you know? The brain's a tricky thing. Feelings are a tricky thing. Now, through this whole podcast, we've been talking about games, how it's affected you positively, negatively, the culture shock. But when did the culture shock start? When did gaming become this big thing in the world? Or when did it start, at least? I don't know if you would call it big at that point, but when did it start? It started in 1958 with William Higginbottom, or Higginbotham. I don't know. I'm going to go with Bottom. But he was a physicist, and he created a simple tennis game. And people love to play sports games. If you're not good at the actual sport, but you're interested in the sport, you just play the video game. Like me, I suck at soccer, but I like to play FIFA. I suck at hockey. I can hardly skate, but I play hockey. You know what I'm saying? I sat at the bench in college playing football, but I play Madden all the time. Love it. Know the game. Maybe not the greatest athlete when it comes to the game. You know what I'm saying? And then first stage, 1970s, 1980s, there was Pac-Man and Donkey Kong. You know, a little joystick game, little buttons. You know, you go to arcades, you know, stuff like that. Second stage was Atari and Sega. I think I played Sega when Sonic was out and they had Mario. Mario was on the Sega. The Atari, I think the Atari is a little more older. I don't remember playing the Atari, but I remember playing the Sega. Third stage, PC gaming, like Doom. I want to say RuneScape was around this time, but I'm not sure because, you know, I didn't have a PC. We were poor. But still, fourth stage, mobile gaming, playing on your phones, DS's, Game Boys. I would say that's mobile. But all these stages, the culture shock just built and built and built. Changing the way we think, the way we talk, the music we listen to, even the way we dress. And that's culture. I mean, culture, like if you're studying in school, people bring up like the first three things of culture are music. Okay, maybe not the first three things, because that would be language. No, I'm right. Those are literally the biggest three. The way people dress, you can tell, like, what type of culture they are, even, like, a religion, all that stuff. The way we talk, language barriers. And three is music. Now, what is the one thing everybody can genuinely, I say, be scared of? Unless you're just some nonchalant, I'm a cool dude. The future. Everybody is scared of the future. Because, let's be honest, now we have AI. AI is terrifying because, well, I mean, you all see movies on how AI has been bad. I brought up Ultron. That was AI. Have y'all not seen iRobot with Will Smith? Bad guy to bring up. Sorry, brother. We gotta bring up Will Smith, iRobot. That's a robot who feels emotion, understands the things. You know, he broke the laws or whatever. If you haven't seen that movie, also a good movie. But everybody's scared of the future. I'm scared of the future. I'm scared of what's gonna happen tomorrow, you know? Like, it's just, it's, what's the word? It's the unknowing. Let's go with that. Yeah, I like that. The unknowing. The future is very unknowing. Now, there's not much study on it, but the future of video games is the metaverse. And I would still say virtual reality, AR reality, which is like Pokemon Go. It's like out and interacting with like the environment while gaming. I don't know. The metaverse is crazy because they want to create like a whole new world, but virtually, which people can hardly handle the game on the sticks, on the controller, without being sucked in and it affecting the way we talk. So like, not much study on it really, just it'll be a whole new world from this one, submerging people into the virtual, which submerging into a whole nother world that isn't real is terrifying. Creating virtual services to buy, so like you're going to pay real money for people to what? Cut your dude's hair in real life? You're going to spend real money to have someone cut your virtual character's hair? Absolutely the fuck not. Plus, don't touch my curls, man. Don't touch the curls. Now I gotta admit, this is pretty cool. Now, if you guys have ever put the goggles on, you know, whatever they're called, but the virtual reality goggles, you know, it's like you're playing the game, but it looks 2D. They want to turn it from 2D to 3D. Now, that's pretty cool. I gotta admit, if you got to sit there and just like spin the world and you could see it like up, like you were actually there, I gotta admit, that's pretty cool. Do I think you should get some merch in that? Absolutely not. I think the scariest thing is to think that people would rather live in a virtual world than the real world. I gotta admit, you could probably advance faster in the virtual world. You know, you can spend money to make your dude look jacked instead of actually going to the gym in real life. Which, I mean, you can pay money to get jacked really fast too. It's called steroids. Look it up. It also has a side effect. It's called little weenie, little balls, little testicles. Yeah. Honestly, I think this is the next thing, and I don't really want to give my idea away, but I'm going to do it anyway because I'm not really into the gaming world. I love entertainment. I love making videos like this in podcasting, but I think the next thing in gaming is like Wii Sports, okay? Now, hang on now. Wii, like, I think it's a mix between the Wii and virtual reality. So, you know, when you're playing the Wii and you're, like, swinging the sword, you're actually making the actions, I think that is the real thing, except it'll be a full body suit. So it'll be, like, virtual reality. It won't just be your hands moving and you kind of, like, holding, like, things and, like, wherever, if you hold your hand out, you'll walk. No, I think it'll be your whole body, which I think they have this type of stuff already. It's, like, on treadmills and you're running and all that stuff. But I think the body suits will actually, like, hurt you. Like, if you were, like, get hit in a boxing game, you'll be like, oh, dang, that kind of hurt, actually. Like, a little sting, you know? I think that is also part of the future, which is terrifying. I think that's scary, but that'd be awesome. Gaming is part of the entertainment world now. It's not just a hobby. It's not just an interest. It's not something that you just do for fun. It's part of entertainment. People love to watch it. People love to spend money on it. And entertainment runs the world. I mean, entertainment is business. Business runs the world, but entertainment runs the business world as of right now. It gets everybody's attention. And that's that's the next topic. That's the next pod, man.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
Appreciate y'all tuning in. Peace. Love you. Bye.